What's up, everybody? What's up? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am going to be going solo this episode. We had some technical issues on Rob's end, so apologies for that. Apologies for starting a little bit late, but here we are. We will give you an episode nonetheless. I should say, first of all, thank you to everyone who came out in Phoenix. That was up there with one of the best weekends of comedy I've ever done. I mean, like, every show was packed, great crowds the whole night through. So I will 100% be back there at the Desert Ridge Improv. That was my first time. I know a lot of people had asked me to come out to Phoenix for years. So I was glad that we did, and it worked out great, and definitely will be back. Next up is one night, June 5th, one night only. Me and Rob will be at the Parkdale Hall. It's a theater up in Toronto. So we got two shows on Friday, June 5th, that really looking forward to that. Haven't been up to Toronto in a while, and it's great comedy crowds up there. And then after that, June 18th, 19th, and 20th is Comedy Works in Denver. We're doing the Comedy Works South on June 18th in Greenwood Village, and then we're doing the Downtown Club, Comedy Works Downtown in Denver, June 19th and 20th. So Comic Dave Smith, comicdavesmith.com for all those ticket links, and Rob Bernstein Comedy is Rob's website for all of his solo stuff. Okay, so let's get into this episode, which is going to be a response to Benjamin Netanyahu on 60 Minutes. Now, Benjamin Netanyahu just sat down a couple days ago. They just released it. And it's interesting on so many different levels. We're going to get into some of these clips here. I mean, it's just really fascinating stuff. The man is truly, I don't know. It's, you know, there's a funny, so neoconservatives and the Israel lobby, but I repeat myself, have made a history of you know, disastrous wars over the last, you know, 25 years. And even before that, neoconservatives have relentlessly called everyone Hitler who they wanted to us to fight a war with. And you see this all the time. The war hawks always demonize everyone as Adolf Hitler. You know, Noriega was Adolf Hitler, and you know, Saddam Hussein was Adolf Hitler, Vladimir Putin's Adolf Hitler, everybody gets called Hitler. Muammar Gaddafi was Hitler for a moment there. But like, there was, I just say, I know that they go to this all the time. I know that it's very lazy. Watching this interview, it was Hitlerian. Like, I don't know what other word to use to describe it. You know, of course, on our last episode, our last public episode, last week, we were talking about how Donald Trump had just announced the war is over, and we were pointing out that it very much is not, and that, in fact, nothing has changed. Okay, well, since then, Donald Trump has essentially announced that the deal fell through with Iran, that he is, I mean, it's really, it's comical. He is saying, he's claiming that they agreed that we could come in and take all their enriched uranium, and then they changed their mind and turned around on it. So now he's blasting them for making a deal and not sticking to it or something like that. First of all, he's lying through his teeth. They clearly never agreed to this. But addition to that, just think about the mentality of Donald Trump, who has, in the middle of negotiations, attacked Iran twice, launched wars of aggression against them in the middle of negotiations. He's now criticizing them for changing their mind, which didn't happen. But even if it did, like, what? Like, he's the one who tore up the JCPOA, but he said they made a deal and then didn't stick to it. Anyway, in the middle of all of this, as Donald Trump is announcing the war is over and trying to make a deal, Benjamin Netanyahu is being interviewed. And it just, I don't know. It does have this feel of like, oh, at least we get a few minutes with the real boss who will let us know whether the war is over or not. All right. Let's get into this because there's so many clips here. So let's just get in and start playing them. Let's start from the beginning, Natalie.
Attributes the reputational harm to Israel almost entirely to social media, which he calls the eighth front of the war.
Because it's this. This is yours, right? Mm-hmm. you're not immune either, because you can penetrate this machine. You can penetrate this little instrument, and you can say about Major Garrett anything you want, and I can paint you as a monster. And if I say it often enough, enough people will believe it.
Do you believe Israel is at risk of losing this war on that social media front? And this is particularly, I believe, important in America for younger Americans, Republican and Democrat, scrolling through images, and they would use words like barbaric in Gaza and in Lebanon.
Israel has gone to unbelievable lengths to get innocent civilians out of harm's way. We text message, millions of text messages to them, make millions of phone calls to them, pamphlets, leaflets, you name it, okay? We have seen the deterioration of the support for Israel in the United States almost, I would say it correlates almost 100% with the geometric rise of social media. And that by itself is not what caused it. And I don't believe in, you know, in censoring them or anything, but I'll tell you what happened. We have several countries that basically manipulated social media, and they do it in a clever way. And that's something that has hurt us badly.
Is it your belief, Mr. Prime Minister?
That all right, Leo, let's pause it. Let's pause it here.
Tactic.
Here, let's pause it here because he's about to ask a follow-up question on this. By the way, I want to say here, I think Major does a terrible job with this interview. I see some people going kind of soft on him here, but I think it's this thing I point out all the time where like they're pretending to be a journalist. Like he's pretending to kind of ask some of the tough questions, but then of course letting him off the hook every single time. So when Benjamin Netanyahu. And there's a few things that are really worth noting here. Number one, it is worth noting that he acknowledges, this is a point I make a lot, but he acknowledges that they're losing the eighth front of the war. The eighth front, meaning the propaganda war. And so he's losing, he admits he's losing it. But of course, the answer can only be because of everything else other than the obvious. You know, he says, you know, the rise in in Israel's, you know, being hated, the rise in, I don't know, it's a weird way to say it, the rise in the fall of support for Israel happens to line up, perfectly correlates with the rise of social media. Well, that's not really true. Now, is it? I mean, social media, when did social media get big? Are you telling me it was October of 23? Because social media was pretty big for, I don't know, the preceding decade, right? I mean, yes, I'm sure you could argue that social media, maybe the usage has gone up in the last 3 years. I don't actually know, to be honest. Like, interesting thing to look up. But it's not as if, like, oh my God, all of a sudden we have Facebook and Twitter. And then that, like, when that first happened, when we first had Facebook and Twitter, Israel support did not plummet that year. Or the next year, or over the next decade. It's like, yes, it is. Now, there were changes in dynamics in social media, right? Major changes. He does not want to mention this. But there were major changes that had immediately preceded the destruction of Gaza, like Elon Musk buying Twitter, and what's his name? Zuckerberg saying he wasn't going to censor anymore on Facebook and Instagram. And YouTube stopped. So like tech censorship had kind of receded quite a bit from where it was a few years earlier. But okay, if you want to say that this free fall of drop of support of Israel correlates with something, well, what does it really, really correlate with? The genocide in Gaza. What are we talking about here? And you know, this stuff where you know, again, we just heard so much of this through the last couple of years. But, you know, to say we sent text messages or we dropped leaflets or we did any of this, it's like, yeah, well, okay. So Israel does everything in their power not to kill innocent civilians. Yeah, except not killing them. Like, it's just, you can't say I do everything in my power. Like, if I just, like, for the sake of the matter, I don't know. If I told everyone to evacuate a building And then I just machine gun fired through the building, and a lot of people didn't evacuate, and a lot of them got killed. I can't say I did everything I could to make sure innocent people in there didn't get killed. Because no, there was one thing you did that you could have not done. So that's a thing that falls under the category of everything. And so, yeah, and that's actually the biggest one. The biggest one was killing all of them. And, you know, he can say that we drop leaflets and this or that. He goes, yeah. But first of all, they do not always do that. Also, oftentimes there's nowhere for the people to evacuate to. Also, oftentimes the people get killed when they go to the place where they're supposed to evacuate. We all read about this through the destruction of Gaza. And you killed like 100,000 people there, probably more. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, say what you want to, but it's like, what are people seeing on social media? What is the connection between social media and people hating Israel? Okay, well, there's just, for example, today, there's this viral video going around. And it is, I'm sure people listening to this, I apologize for describing really gruesome shit, but I'm sure you've seen a lot of this over the last 2.5 years. But so there's this new one out, and I know people will dispute, well, this video is fake or this video isn't real. And honestly, the truth is that it just doesn't even really matter because so many of the videos are real. And we know this level of human suffering is going on. Even Benjamin Netanyahu can't deny it. He has to get into some how the hell of war stuff and how he personally knows and he lost a brother in war. And so it's like he's pretending that this is it. But so the video that's going viral today is I guess a 5-year-old who's hysterically crying, consoling his 2-year-old brother who's hysterically crying because they both just lost their mother. And okay, so anyway, so that's what people are seeing on social media. This is what we're talking about here. And like, I don't know, most human beings, when they see that, they don't go, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, you dropped a pamphlet? Well, then what are we talking about here? There's no moral issue. I mean, you knew this was going to happen whether you dropped the pamphlet or not, but if you dropped a pamphlet, then we don't got to think about that 5-year-old and that 2-year-old. You know, that is not the attitude of any decent human being. And so, you know, just forget that. But then, of course, he puts, while he's not, and of course, Major's about to ask the follow-up question here, Israel's actions have anything to do with this, which already, like, this is what I mean, he did a terrible job. What a ridiculous question. It's just not even the way you would ask a question. And you'll see them, like journalists, when they have permission and when someone makes some shit like that up, if they'll push back. If Donald Trump were to say, you know, I believe we won the election in 2020, the first thing one of these journalists would say, sir, that's not true. But he won't give them that here. So this is not true. but for example, Netanyahu makes here what is a very bold claim. You know, for how much these guys all, you know, like when you hear people bashing Candace Owens or Tucker Carlson or me or whoever, they call us conspiracy theorists. They go, oh, you're the just asking questions crowd. Oh, if you believe something about Epstein or the Israel lobby or this, oh, you have this whole conspiracy in your mind. You know, someone just told Scott Horton the other day on Piers Morgan show where he referenced the Samson option. And he goes, oh, this is conspiracy kookery right here. And he's like, Seymour Hersh wrote a whole book about it. Like, one of the most well-respected journalists of the last 100 years wrote an entire book on it. But anyway. But so here you have Benjamin Netanyahu. He throws out that, in fact, there are one or two countries who are, like, heavily manipulating social media. And this is why we're seeing so many images that are making people angry at Israel. And just to be clear, he presents no evidence of this. Absolutely zero. Not even a claim, not even a reason why he suspects that, or we know this, and so that kind of indicates this. Just throw it out there. Why is everyone doing this? I don't know. Foreign propaganda. Foreign propaganda is something that Benjamin Netanyahu throws out with no evidence to back it up. Like Benjamin Netanyahu, who's on videotape meeting with American influencers talking about the acquisition of TikTok and how this is a wonderful thing because like the guy who's actively trying to control social media, openly bragging about it, just claims that's what other countries are doing. Is that every accusation is a confession type shit, you know? and presents no evidence whatsoever. And it's like, no, dude, what's clearly going on here? What's clearly going on is that social media was around. It was not being censored, at least not in the draconian fashion that it had previously been. And Israel launched a genocide. And so they launched a genocide in an environment where people critical of Israel could speak, could make their case. Videos of what they were doing could be shown to the world. And this was the environment that led to them losing the propaganda war. I'm sorry, but this is just obvious for anyone to say. And anyone who's trying to pretend that this is all just an op, it's not. That we've just been kicking their ass in this very, very public debate for 2.5 years now. That's not the answer. The answer is that all of that is some type of manipulation. It appears that way, but it's not really that way because of Qatari bots or something like that. Okay, show me a shred of evidence to back that up. Like, what do you have other than just asserting that that's what's going on? That it's not that on Piers Morgan, there'll be a pro-Israel guy versus an anti-Israel guy. They argue, and the entire crowd goes, the pro-Israel guy is full of shit. Because that's what we all see. But you're claiming it's something else. And yet, you might notice, they never have, literally, they never have anything to point to. Nothing. And of course, Major does not push him on this. He's just allowed to make that assertion. It was a really bold one. And then we're just going to move on. All right. So now we can move on to the second part, which is a good second part of the question.
The thing that Israel has done, tactically or strategically, has made no mistakes either in Gaza or the West Bank that have, in their own way, contributed to this negative impression of Israel, whether it's on social media or someplace else.
No, of course. Look, it's war. And in war, armies sometimes miss. And civilians die. And these are mistakes. These are not deliberate things that happen.
Pause it here already. Because it's just, you get the point I'm making here about what a hack journalist Major is? That he's literally going, like, think about that question. But is there any strategic or tactical mistake that you made that may have contributed to why people hate you? It's like sitting down with Adolf Hitler and going, you know, the world hates you over this whole Holocaust thing. And him being like, oh, you know, it's just that fucking the Jews run the media and they've convinced everybody that this is that, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, oh, that's just the attitude. They go, now, but in your own genocide, were there any tactical mistakes that you know, like, what is this? And then, of course, he's going to go like this same bullshit. The bottom line is that the reason why you're losing on this eighth front is, just think about this right already, where they go, you're losing on the eighth front is what they call the fucking propaganda war. Why is it the eighth front? Because there's fucking seven other fronts, right? Because you're destroying Gaza, the West Bank, the Houthis, Iran, Lebanon, like, because you're fighting so many wars that it's the eighth front is the propaganda. Okay, look. The reason why you're losing is because this is not a response, man, to go, hey, we've made some tactical mistakes. Sometimes armies miss. Dude, no one's talking about where you missed. That's not what the conversation's even about. And that is also true and also tragic that sometimes you hit the wrong building or whatever. Man, look, I'd like to assume that American Tomahawk that hit that little girl's school was a miss. Please hope that was not intentional. But the apartment buildings in southern Lebanon that the IDF has been taking down, I don't know, let's say this morning, they didn't miss. That was the target. They hit their target. They destroyed Gaza. Your target was Gaza. There's 2 million people live there. And so, like, yeah, you destroy the whole thing, a lot of people die. Oh, I mean, you know, so to just get out of it with like, yeah, sometimes, you know, in wars, bad things happen. It's like, right, okay. Let's be real specific about the bad things. Like that 5-year-old boy, you know, comforting his 2-year-old brother. That's what happens when you launch wars like this. And that's what decent people tend to be opposed to. All right, let's keep playing.
media front, on the propaganda front, and we've not done well on the propaganda war.
Yeah. So, you know, at least he does admit that. Well, why do you think that might be? Why do you think it might be that you're not doing well in the propaganda war? It's like, because when you come here and you may, it's not like you have some new argument or you have nothing. You have, I mean, literally what Benjamin Netanyahu just presented here is the type of garbage argument that I've seen 25 different people bring to me on like Piers Morgan or other debates or something like that. And it's just, it's very easy to just tear it to shreds because this is nonsense. You're saying we're losing the propaganda war. Well, what's the, it's not like he's coming on here and going like, we're losing the propaganda war, but look, see how they're full of shit. See how all the people criticizing Israel are getting it all wrong. Like, don't get me, dude, I'm losing a propaganda. I've done nothing but lose propaganda wars my entire life. I'm a libertarian, you know, like I'm losing the propaganda war in a sense. I'm trying to convince everyone to hate the government and it's going better than it has been, but it's not, you know, it's not there. But like, when I try to expose the propaganda, I could take down what they're saying and point out all the lies, point out how we know their lies. He can't do any of that. He's got to come here and just assert foreign governments are influencing social media, and that's why you hate Israel. We never target civilians. We only accidentally miss and hit them. All right. It's, you're losing the war because you're wrong, and you can't defend your position. Let's move to the next clip.
Frequently misattributed to Winston Churchill.
Nope. What happened there? Are you you there, Natalie? Here we go.
No, but I want to probe it a little bit. This idea that a younger generation are on social media or scrolling, do you believe Israel is at risk of losing this war on that social media front? Meaning what is being portrayed, what is being said? And this is particularly, I believe, important in America for younger Americans, Republican and Democrat, who have hardened themselves against Israel, scrolling through images which tell them that there is something not as you describe, but uncivilized. And they would use words like barbaric in Gaza and in Lebanon.
We have seen.
No, this is different. No, I don't think so.
The support for Israel in the United States almost, I would say it correlates almost.
Oh, yeah, you know what? You're right. You're right. This is the same. Sorry, sorry. Let's go to the next clip. We'll edit all this out. You're right. I thought it was different clips, but you're right.
Anti-Semitism, this vile vilification of the Jews, took a reprieve after the Holocaust. Took a reprieve. Took 80 years. You know, it wasn't fashionable to be anti-Semitic, so you didn't say these things in polite society. But it's come back. It's almost like it accompanies us throughout.
What is that about, Mr. Prime Minister?
I think,
because I want to stop you right there, because in my career, which started in 1990 in Washington, up until very recently, it was an established fact in Congress. Established fact. The Republicans and Democrats had a default proposition favorable to Israel. Not always, not universally, but a default proposition that began with yes. That's not true anymore. That's less true than at any other time I've covered Washington.
Pause it. Pause it for a second. By the way, again, this is just like the framing of this question, because it was almost kind of going to an interesting revelation there. And then Major takes it off track. And because there's something about, okay, there's two different claims being made here. And I just want you to focus for a moment here. Just how utterly unhinged, bizarre, religious, and paranoid what Benjamin Netanyahu is saying is. So essentially, right, his argument is that anti-Semitism is like this force, like this evil spirit that has always been plaguing humanity. Why do people hate Jews? They're just possessed by this evil spirit, and then they're evil, and then they hate. Like, by the way, this is, and I'm not saying that people don't get, you know, possessed by evil forces at times in life. I've grown to be more open to that view. But anytime anyone is describing their enemies this way, it's always propaganda bullshit. Like, it's that, there's nothing else to it. It's just, I don't know, this force after after World War II, it took an 80-year break, but look, it's back. Like, what? This is just not how human beings actually operate. Everybody just fell under the spell of hating Jews all of a sudden over the last couple of years, as we just mentioned before. And it just happens to correlate when you started launching these aggressive, brutal military campaigns that are slaughtering civilians by the tens of thousands. But then Major, he pivots to, you know, I've been doing this since 1990, and it used to be the obvious given that both major political parties support Israel, which is a different thing. That's a different thing than why some dark force starts making everyone hates the Jews. Now he made it about Congress and how they vote. And also, that's still the same. That has not changed at all. What's changed is people's attitudes. And so, sure, I'm sure you could find some more statements of congressmen kind of sucking up to say things that they think their voters want to hear. But as we've watched, is everybody paying even the slightest bit of attention to this knows, and this is something you kind of can't get away from, that we have in America this very fake two-party system where essentially, you know, you're to believe that's democracy because there's two parties. I just think about it for a second, how actually absurd that is, right? That we're supposed to believe we have democracy because we have Democrats and Republicans. Now, if we just had one party, everyone would look at that and go, oh, this is one party dictatorship. But you see, we're not one party dictatorship because we have two parties, right? It's just too crazy. So, and then everybody, like I said, slightly paying attention to this, notices that Israel started genociding the Palestinians in 2023, did it all through 2024, and it was funded and by the Biden administration. Then Donald Trump comes in and they continue doing it, and it's funded by the Trump administration. So it's very clear for everyone to see this war that we're fighting in Iran is a joint U.S.-Israeli war. It's very clear that both the Democrats and the Republicans support Israel. No matter whether you have a Democrat in charge or a Republican in charge, Israel's still getting their money. Israel's still getting their weapons. Israel's still getting resolutions vetoed at the United Nations. Israel, like, they're getting it. So, again, in what meaningful sense do we have democracy when super majorities of the American people are against this war? Majorities of the American people now oppose Israel. And yet no one represents that point of view. You have two parties. Both of them represent the minority point of view on this most consequential relationship. Anyway, people notice that. It's very hard for them to not notice that. So anyway, I guess the point here is that, first of all, just to the question that Major's asking, that dynamic has not changed. The Congress and the White House still support Israel. They support them more than ever. Israel, in all of their years, and Israel's done some pretty wild, horrific shit. You know, Israel has committed many, many massacres, and they've atrocities, and they've committed mass ethnic cleansing campaigns, and they've had a brutal occupation going for almost 60 years now of the Palestinians, of the Gazans, and the people in the West Bank. But to be very clear, Israel's never done anything like they did in Gaza in their history. This was the worst thing that Israel's ever done, by far. And, you know, Joe Biden supported them through that, through the worst thing that they were doing. And now Donald Trump has out Zionist Joe Biden by fivefold or something like that. And so, like, anyway, my point is just that Israel, while doing the worst things it's ever done, has had full support from the United States of America's government. So again, wherever you fall on the argument, that's kind of just a fact. So So that dynamic has not changed at all. And Netanyahu is trying to start with this ridiculous, like, religious argument that people are just possessed. It's just an old-timey evil spirit has risen up and taken your kids again. And that's why young people in America don't support Israel. And Major doesn't correct him on it. He just changes the focus to where Congress stands or something like that. It's unbelievable. As imagine, try for a second to wrap your head around the concept. Imagine an Arab leader coming to America and giving some type of answer like this. Like, ancient spirits are possessing you, and that's why they're making your people want to fight a war with our people. They would immediately call that, immediately, like, just laugh that out of the room. Not when Benjamin Netanyahu does it. All right, let's keep playing.
Something else.
Yes, it is. Well, these are historical cycles, which my father...
Historical cycle.
Yes, we are. I mean, anti-Semitism is...
Ebb and flowed,
but it flowed throughout our history. And the reason it, you know...
But America's not a place where things like that tend to come back.
Well, they can come back. They were there in the 1930s with Father Coughlin, and they ebbed because of the war. But it's come back. What is it? I think it's an interesting question of why this happens. And I think there's a natural human tendency between people and also between peoples, collective groups. It's called jealousy. And jealousy often, if somebody is very successful, you can be appreciative of them, especially if it's, say, a very successful and strong country, then you temper your jealousy and you go to respect. But if you...
So these are the embers of envy.
I think it's part of it. I don't think it explains all of it, but I think one thing I can say is that there are many explanations for the phenomenon, the durability of anti-Semitism over the ages. My father was a great historian of this. Mm-hmm. And we can have a separate discussion on it.
Dude, I mean, this is like real deal levels of sociopathy. I mean, I don't know if you've ever like dealt with a real toxic narcissistic person before, but like, that is the type of shit they would say. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to just like get into psychoanalyzing Bibi Netanyahu here, but this is like the horrible guy whose like wife left him and kids no longer talk to him and is just is telling you that the problem was that they didn't appreciate his greatness or something like that. Like, that is why it's it's envy. That's what it is. You see, it's a mix of a dark historical spiritual form that ebbs and flows, but it flows and it goes and it comes back and it captured the minds of America, you know. And even Major going, that in America, that doesn't usually happen in America. Like, we don't just all wake up one day and go like, dude, I'm getting an itching to do slavery again. You guys want to do that? Like, I know that was considered like wrong for a whole lot of years, but like, it used to be this dark thing that humans did. And I don't know. I'm just getting in it. Let's get into that again. Let's just be medieval for a little bit. You guys want to do that? Like, what? This is just, it just makes no sense whatsoever. But then I'll throw in like, also probably like they're just jealous of us because we're so strong. We're so successful. We're so like, really? You think more than the genocide? You think more than the genocide that you committed for the world to see in 4K and forced us to fund it against our wishes? You don't think that maybe? You think it was mostly just jealousy? Maybe we're like, I wish I could genocide some Gazans, but I don't get to, so I hate Benjamin Netanyahu. Or it's just because we're just so in awe of Israel that it plays on our envy. Dude, the nerve, you're our fucking welfare state, bruh. You're coming to an American, I think they filmed this in Israel, but you're talking to an American reporter that to air on one of America's networks, not even cable networks, one of America's networks. Granted, that doesn't mean what it used to, but still, like, you're talking to an American audience and you're saying we're jealous of you? You are a puny little welfare state who only has any relevance because we say so, because we allow it. We don't, but our government sure does. But the idea that you would say we're somehow jealous of you, that we're envious, That is the only reason. I mean, this is just the lack of self-reflection. I mean, for you to ever, ever be in a situation where like everyone in a room hates your guts and your immediate conclusion is that it must be because you're so great and they're just jealous. This is like 16-year-old girl levels of cope. Like, what? And why did this rise up so much right around the time you started destroying Gaza? All of a sudden, the jealousy of the Jewish state just got out of control right around that time. These historical dark forces reemerged right around that time. Ain't that a hell of a coincidence? Like, what do you even say here? What rationally describes this better? That people were outraged by the atrocities that they could see with their own eyes? Or this? Anyway, let's keep playing.
Is the war with Iran over? And if it isn't, who will decide when it is?
I think it accomplished a great deal, but it's not over because there's still nuclear material, enriched uranium that has to be taken out of Iran. There's still enrichment sites that have to be dismantled. There are still proxies that Iran supports. There are ballistic missiles that they still want to produce. Now, we've degraded a lot of it, but all of that is still there, and there's work to be done.
How do you envision the highly enriched uranium will be removed from Iran?
You go in and you take it out.
With what? Special forces from Israel, special forces from the United States?
Well, I'm not going to talk about military means, but what President Trump has said to me, I want to go in there. And I think it can be done physically. That's not the problem. If you have an agreement and you go in and you take it out, why not? That's the best way.
What if there isn't an agreement? Can it be taken out by force?
Well, you're going to ask me these questions. I'm going to dodge them because I'm not going to talk about our military possibilities, plans, or anything of the kind.
And I'm just trying to get at how long is it going to take to achieve that aim?
I'm not going to give a timetable to it, but I'm going to say that's a terrifically important mission.
So, all right, there are a few things I think are important to break down here. And also, this to me was the actually the most disgusting part of the interview on Major's part, just how, like, the dereliction of duty to be a journalist. I mean, to sit here and have the president of the United States of America is in the middle of a war that clearly was, it's a joint effort. It is the war that the man you're interviewing has spent his entire career publicly trying to get our government to fight. Now, why, you might ask, why over the last 30 plus years has Netanyahu been trying to get America to overthrow the government in Iran? They're such a big, powerful army. We're all jealous of them, right? Why hasn't he done it? Okay, here's why. Because he can't. He can't do it. This without America, the idea that Israel was going to go in and topple Saddam Hussein or the Ayatollah or even Muammar Gaddafi, or even Bashar al-Assad, is all ridiculous. They can do it on their own. They can do these things for one reason and one reason only, and that is that they have the most powerful nation, the most powerful military in the history of the world to do it for them. That's why they advocate for us to do this, okay? So you're interviewing a guy who's been trying to get the president into this war, trying to get every president into this war. This is on record. This is all known. And also, it's kind of known that he did get this president into the war, that he was the chief guy who sold him. It is a joint military effort, the thing this guy's been trying to do his entire career that he's now doing with our government. And clearly, at the very least, it is not going good, man. And none of these war goals have been achieved. And the global economy is suffering as a result of this. And Donald Trump has himself said, I want to make a deal. The war's over. These were Donald Trump's words, that the war is over. We're working on making a deal. And you have a foreign leader coming in now and dictating that, in fact, it's not over because we haven't achieved every one of the pre-war goals, which are all still the goals, including the hardest ones, like ending their support for Hezbollah, which, you know, seems like something that might be more of a concern to the Israelis than the Americans. Is that a crazy assumption to make, that a militia in the southern part of Lebanon might be a slightly bigger concern for, say, Israel than the middle part of North America over here? That might be a little bit more in their interest. But he's insisting, no, the war has to keep going, has to keep going till that. And then the other nearly impossible task is extracting their enriched uranium, which again, well, okay, let me just make this point first. He says that he is essentially vetoing the president, saying he wants to end the war, saying, no, 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 we're going to continue this war. And then insists that that we extract the enriched uranium. Now, when pushed on how the heck you do this, he goes, it'd be very easy to do if we had a deal. Well, yeah, like what? Okay. I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, this is on the level of like, well, okay, not on the level, a logical analogy. Not saying these things are exactly the same. Let's just say, like I used this example on the members only episode. Let's say I was hanging out with one of you people who are listening. We're hanging out together and we saw John Jones, the UFC heavyweight champion, across the street. And I went, you know, I'm going to go kick John Jones' ass in front of everybody. I'm going to go beat the shit out of that guy. And you were like, wait, well, how are you going to do that? You know, like, how are you going to do that? That might be a relevant question. How are you going to do that? And I went, well, it'd be very easy to do if we had a deal that John Jones agreed to, that he's going to let me kick his ass. Like, that is true. That is fair point. That would change things. But then the question is, yeah. Well, what if he doesn't agree to that? Because he's clearly already not agreed to that. Like, what is this? And then what's the answer there? I'm going to dodge the question. Exactly. So you have no answer. Will it be U.S. troops or Israeli troops? Nah, I'm not going to get into the military of it. Right. So then you have nothing. So you are vetoing the president of the United States of America, duly elected by our country. That's who gets to decide who uses our military resources in this way, imperfect as the system is. So you're saying, no, the war continues with no plan, for how you can do this. You are not able, you clearly are not able to do this. Like Israel alone trying to go get the enriched uranium. Israel is a country of 9 million people. Iran is a country of 92 million people. Israel can't do anything to Iran. The only question here is what we are going to do. And, you know, for him to put this out there with nothing, then you have nothing. Then you have, if you don't have a plan, then you have nothing. Then it's just a wish list. I'd like to be able to beat up John Jones. I'd like to get all of their enriched uranium. How are you going to do this against a resisting opponent? You're going to, like, what? Have America invade the country and will take losses in the tens or hundreds of thousands? That's a sacrifice that Benjamin Netanyahu is willing to make, I guess. But anyway, the other point that I was going to make that I stopped myself to finish this on was, it's important to just see through all this shit that, listen, Benjamin Netanyahu does not care about extracting the enriched uranium. It's simply not what this is about. And I don't know. I don't know how many times I got to say this or how many times he's got to admit this in his own words, but this is about regime change for him. And this is what I was saying throughout the 12-day war. And everyone tried to argue, no, 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 it wasn't about that. It was just about the enriched uranium. It was just about hitting these targets and setting them back. And then we did that, claimed they were totally obliterated, and we're right back at war with them. Oh, yeah. And with the open aim this time of regime change. Now, of course, obviously, they got Donald Trump to agree to that, but it didn't work out. And by all estimates now, it's just not going to. And we might get into that more on tomorrow's show, because there's been a whole lot of, you know, just essentially all the information that's come out now is all the assessments all around are that this regime is not falling. Like even choking them in the Strait of Hormuz, all this stuff, that they're not falling. Our own intelligence is saying that now openly. And, you know, so now the thing is, what Benjamin Netanyahu knows, though, is that if you commit to all these war goals, right, if you commit to saying, no, you have to have all the war goals you had at the very beginning of the war, none of which have been achieved, by saying you have to have all, he keeps the war going. He keeps the war going. He keeps the thing escalating. And then he views there's a chance that the regime implodes, which at a certain point, I guess they would. And so this is the game Benjamin Netanyahu's playing, and you're a journalist, and you sit here and just let him play it. No moment of going like, wait a minute, sir, you are advocating for dragging our country into a war, and you don't even have a plan for how this would possibly work out, because he doesn't, because his plan is just escalate the thing enough, and the regime collapses eventually. That's the end goal. And so that's what he's trying to do. All right, let's keep playing.
Frequently misattributed to Winston Churchill. History is written by the victors. He didn't say it. Lots of people said it. He didn't say it.
No, he said, I don't worry about it because I'll write it myself.
But that idea that victors write the history. What will the history, the state of Israel, will write about this conflict with Iran? And when will you know it's been victorious?
I think we already achieved great things. Remember, Iran was surrounding us with a noose of death of simultaneous invasions from Gaza, from Hamas, and from Lebanon by Hezbollah. We were going to be rocketed and pelleted with ballistic missiles that would destroy our cities. Iran would have atomic weapons to destroy us. We smashed the terror axis. It's not finished. We have still work to do. Right. But it's clear that Israel has emerged as the most powerful country in the Middle East. We have a partnership with the U.S. that is second to none. The national security memorandum that was issued a few months ago described Israel as the model ally, not the ally, the model ally of the United States. So we've changed our position from being on the verge of being exterminated, being annihilated, to a position where we knock back the annihilators and become a very forceful element, a very forceful country in the Middle East. Now, all power is relative. You know that. All power is relative. Yes. You know. So Iran hasn't disappeared.
Hezbollah hasn't disappeared.
Hamas hasn't disappeared. But they're, in many ways, in some cases, a shadow of their former selves. They certainly don't threaten us now with annihilation. They try to kill our people. They occasionally succeed. But there's no question that the relative power of Israel has changed. And, you know, that's been our situation. When we started out, we were 600,000 people on the beach here, and we were attacked by 7 Arab armies, and we survived by the skin of our teeth. And as we got stronger, we made peace with the Arab states. I, myself, along with President Trump, we made the Abraham Accords, peace with 4 Arab countries. I now see the possibility of the expansion of those agreements and the expansion and the deepening of the agreements we do have to alliances with Arab states of the kind that we never even dreamed of. And that's the result of the change in the relative power of Israel, the fact that we face down this neighborhood bully, this killer regime in Iran. That's brought quite a few of the Arab countries closer together with Israel. And that's good for peace.
Hey, it's interesting you mentioned that, Mr. Prime Minister, because I just read...
So let's just pause it. Sorry, that's the end of the clip. Was that the last one, Natalie, or is there one more? Let me see. Okay, cool. Let me know. You know, it's just... It's really something to hear Benjamin Netanyahu spin his line of bullshit about, you know, how Israel was on the brink of total annihilation, but now they're strong. You know, Israel has, he says, we can, essentially, this is part of the Netanyahu doctrine that he's just like slipping in there, that it's like, yeah, this was the whole thing, man. It's all like, what it really comes down to is just that, like, again, like I said before, even if you go back to 1996, the clean break, and Benjamin Netanyahu wrote a book called Fighting Terrorism. I think it might have been in 95 when he wrote Fighting Terrorism. It's a book worth reading. Very easy read, very quick, pretty stupid book. But this whole kind of greater Israel, clean break, 7 countries in 5 years strategy, right, has always been, like, again, like I said, the Israel, let's say in the 1990s, The idea that that the Israel government of 1996 was going to go topple Saddam Hussein's government, like, it's, I mean, they talk about it as if there's a possibility that they could do it, but it's clearly all about getting the U.S. to do it for them. And in effect, when it ends up happening, that's always what it is getting the U.S. to do it with them. Sometimes Israel will help out in some covert way, maybe even help out with some air power, but they ain't sending troops in, and they're not doing any of this themselves. But they are playing a very large role in getting America to do a lot of these things, Iraq, Libya, Syria, you know, and now Iran. And this is his thing. Yeah, listen, if we take out the killer regimes, as he calls them, then we can live in peace. Now, of course, this whole plan also is, you know, relies on a lot of American bribes. You know, like the Abraham agreement was basically bribing all these countries with U.S. taxpayer money, or, you know, military equipment, but same difference, right? That was purchased with U.S. taxpayer money. So we bribe all these countries. You know, we have to pay Egypt like $3 billion a year, and Jordan billions of dollars every year, and we have Saudi Arabia and UAE and all these countries, Qatar. We have to like bribe all these countries to be friendly with Israel, and then we have to overthrow all the killer regimes, and then we can have peace. This is Netanyahu's pitch, you know, that this is essentially what we can do, and you can't even imagine, and we're on the verge of everything being so great, and then we're going to have a bigger round of the Abraham Accords, which, by the way, if you remember the Abraham Accords, that changed life for Americans, right? You remember how different your life was before the Abraham Accords, and then after the Abraham Accords? I mean, like, I don't even know what the pitch is supposed to be for us here. But the thing about it is this, right? Number one, the American taxpayer doesn't wish to pay for any of this. We don't wish to bribe all of these other countries and then spend, you know, the trillions of dollars and thousands of lives of our soldiers on these wars. We didn't wish to do any of this. Also, we were never really informed why we were doing it. And so there's this inherent problem right there, which is that your plan ends up just costing my country, well, it costs trillions of dollars. So this is, yeah, doesn't work so good for us now, does it? But then, you know, one might also point out that, so first of all, you're not entitled to American money and military support. And this country overwhelmingly doesn't want to give it to you anymore. And so there's that element. But then also, you know, if you're going to say, like in your whole plan here, that, as he refers to it, we're standing up to the bully, this killer government of Iran. Well, you know, hey, Grok, who's killed more people, the government of Israel or the government of Iran? Even you could even have your bullshit 40,000 number of innocent people that Iran killed. Like, it's not even close, not even close. And if you want to add up all these wars that have been necessary for this Netanyahu doctrine, right, to stand up to all the killer regimes and include the war in Iraq and the war in Libya and Syria and all this, all the U.S. wars, like, you know, we're kind of the killer regime. You're the killer regime. That's just those are just the facts. Like, you're using a word, you're talking about killing, except the U.S. and Israel government kill far more people. So that's a little bit of a problem there. And then I guess the other thing I have that's a little bit of an issue is that you say, then we can have peace. You know, now, just to be very clear, as some people have seen this video, right? There's Netanyahu, when he went by a different name, I can't remember his old name, but there's an old video of him when he was like, I don't know, like 25 or something like that. And he always looked old. He looked like a 40-year-old when he was 25. But there's this video of him. I think he's in his 20s, maybe his 30s. And he goes, he's quoted as saying, it's almost the same line as what he says about Iraq. He goes, if the Soviet Union falls, I guarantee you there will be positive reverberations around the region. You know, back then, he was trying to say that the PLO is only so the Palestinian Liberation Organization, like what he was saying essentially was that the Arab terrorism that we're dealing with here is a result of them being proxies of the Soviet Union. Like, they're the Soviet Union's guys here. Now, it is true that they did some business with the Soviet Union, but why was Benjamin Netanyahu framing it that way? He was trying to say, hey, America, your fight is our fight. This is their, this is, you know what I mean? Like, this is your fight too, because it's a, this was in the middle of the Cold War. So like, yo, this is a dynamic between the Soviet Union and you. So anyway, he's on record being like, yo, be in this fight with us. And if the Soviet Union falls, positive reverberations will sweep the region. Of course, he guaranteed that if Saddam Hussein fell, positive reverberations would sweep the region. Like every single what? So in other words, he's sitting here saying, you're the killer regimes. We got to take you out and then we can have peace. But this plan that Benjamin Netanyahu has been working on since the mid-1990s has resulted in the war in Iraq, the war in Libya, the war in Syria, the destruction of Gaza, the war in Iran, the war on South Lebanon, massive bombing campaigns in Yemen. Like, it's been permanent war. So fucking forgive me if I don't trust that the guy whose plan has been permanent militarism, permanent war. Look at Israel itself. Look at the nation of Israel. That is a permanent military state. Now, they may say it has to be that way because we're a tiny little state in the middle of this big Arab world, and maybe that's the case. But this is the perspective of somebody who has a permanent military state, permanent militarism, a mass surveillance state, always in a state of war. Everybody is drafted. Everybody must serve in the IDF. Well, I guess not the religious Jews, but everyone else, including women, including their girls, have to all go do training in the IDF. And like, okay, even if you want to say, hey, we're this tiny little country in the Middle East and that's the way it's got to be. Okay, well, we're the United States of fucking America. And we're supposed to be a free country, not a permanent militarism country. And because of this plan, it's transformed my country into that. Maybe this and not ancient dark forces have something to do with why people aren't supporting Israel anymore. This plan, and I'm not letting my government off the hook or saying that it's all Israel's fault or anything like that. I first and foremost, as anyone who listens to this show knows, I first and foremost blame the presidents of the United States of America. Now, people who argue with me try to, there's a common like gotcha. Well, they'll ask me, they're like, which president do you like, Dave? Just give me the one you like. And then I got to go, yeah, no, I hate them all. Okay, fine. But listen, it's their responsibility. They were elected by the American people. They're, every last one of them have signed off on this. But my country, like I grew up in America in the 1980s, and that country doesn't fucking exist anymore. And it was a very free country compared to today's country in many ways. And one of them was that we didn't have this, we didn't live under mass surveillance. We didn't live under permanent militarism and constant forever wars. Now, don't get me wrong. We were an empire. There were a lot of problems already in the 1980s, and the government had done a lot of bad stuff. But this has transformed it. And it was the global war on terrorism that did it. And so Benjamin Netanyahu, this guy whose plan has been to we should both be countries that are permanent military states, permanent mass surveillance states, and that comes with all the liberty for its citizens that you might expect when you live under a permanent military state, and fight wars constantly. Like, I'm sorry. You can't sit here and come to me and say, I have a plan to deal with these killer governments, and then eventually we'll bring peace. What you bring is a loss of liberty and forever war. And we want no part of it. So, you know, he can sit here and say he's not for censorship. But here's the thing. It's kind of like Donald Trump saying he's not for, you know, escalating the war or something like that. It's like, yeah, but kind of what choice do you have now? That's the thing we're all wondering. You know, what choice do you have? Because you're sitting here and you're recognizing at least that the problem exists. You're going, yeah, we're getting destroyed on social media. We're getting destroyed by the podcasters and all these people. But then you can't diagnose the problem at all. You have to just pretend it's for every other reason other than the obvious. So what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do here? Because you can't win the debate. You can't win the debate with this nonsense. And that's why I think the only thing they can do is try to shut us up. in one way or the other. And we'll see. Let's see him try, I guess. I don't know. What else can we do? I'm not going to shut up voluntarily. So, all right. That's today's show. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. I will catch you next time. Peace.